Welcome to the Fan Experience, a Phoenix Rising supporters podcast. Stick around for interviews, analysis, fan stories, and our love affair with Phoenix Rising. And now, to kick things off, is your host, Niall McCarthy.
Phoenix Rising family, on Saturday, April 1st, Phoenix Rising hosted San Diego Loyal in their new stadium in downtown Phoenix. It was the home opener for Phoenix, and it was a thrilling night for the fans. The game ended in a tie, with each team scoring two goals. Joining me to talk about the game is the one, the only USL lead analyst, Devin Kerr. Devin, how are you?
I'm good, man. I miss you guys. I miss the league. You know, Mike Watson and I were just talking how it's so weird. We're going to be like week 10 or 11 by the time we have a nationally televised game this season. So that's frustrating, but still pay attention from afar, still watch a million games, traveling more in the spring and summer than I'm used to. But yeah, it's great to be around the USL Championship family again. USL in general, you know, just got off the phone with John Hartz too.
So, okay.
Yeah, it's great to be around the leagues again, and excited to see Phoenix Rising in action.
Nice one. So what have you been up to?
Oh, let's see. Woke up this morning. That's what happens when you have children. You make crappy jokes. You know, had an opportunity presented in front of me. I was very fortunate that I was selected as one of the analysts for MLS on Apple TV. So that's been really cool.
Amazing.
Yeah. Very, very fortunate, blessed, excited, humbled, you name it. Really good group of people. And it's a learning experience. It's fun. You know, people do things differently, and to be a part of something that is really starting a network on the ground floor is super fun. It's also interesting finding a way to balance everything in terms of workload. You know, USL, you could almost do it, at least I could, in my sleep, because when you're calling five or six games a week, every single week you're seeing 40% of the league. That not being the case, you know, I'll get done with an MLS game on a Saturday night, go back to my hotel, and I will download five or six games so that as I'm flying home on Sunday, I can watch them throughout my travels. So that's right. The way that I stay in tune. You know, instead of being able to call all those games, I still get a chance to see all of it. Still have children. They haven't disowned me yet, so that's nice, which is good. Still married, supposedly. She doesn't wear the ring anymore, but we're still there. dogs are still good, you know, still living life, being happy. Honestly, I'm one of the few people, at least in my everyday life, that I really don't have complaints. I'm happy. I'm healthy. I love what I do for a living. I have great people around me, and I'm fortunate that people like yourselves are kind enough to include me in their ventures, and it's awesome. And that's not BS. That's truly my personality. I'm just happy to get up every single day.
We know you are. We know you are. And we know you love talking about the games and about Phoenix Rising. So let's get to it. We're here to talk about the Phoenix San Diego game. So this is the second time that the teams faced off this season. The first time San Diego beat us 3-0. They were looking to make a statement and we were looking for revenge. What was your expectation going into this match, Devin?
It's probably the expectation that I would say most Phoenix fans have, and that's getting back to a level of dominance. Now, that needs to be tailored, for sure, because that's the expectation towards the end goal for the end of the season, and this team is going to experience a ton of growing pains in between that. 17 new players, a new system. I know that people can revert back to Juan coming in last season, Juan Guerra, and taking over the reins from Rick Shantz. But that would still be a continuation this year, even if it was the same group, and yet it's a totally new group. Then you go into the growing pains of travel, right? And starting the season on the road and a new stadium. Like, all of that stuff, it's enough when you have one of those things thrown at you, Niall. But when you get all that start to compress itself together, it makes it really hard physically and mentally. And so I just try to stick to the game itself, right? And I look at the group and I think that there's a ton of talent there. And if you pay attention closely enough, there are some things going on in this game and within this team so far that are really, really good. And there's other stuff that I look and go, that is just really terrible, honestly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I felt the same in the first two games I did after this game, that there were times in this match where if you could replicate 30 to 45 seconds sequences and, you know, manipulate that into larger portions throughout the match, you literally could be talking about a title contending team. But at that point in time, you're not there. And so what you do see are these finite glimpses where, you know, Gabby Torres will drop in deep and Crutzen will step up higher and push the tempo within the midfield. That is very much Juan Guerra's three-back system out of Oakland, right? He wants the three to attack, to apply pressure on their defensive front, to move that into the midfield and challenge the shape of the opposition. You see that. There's a good relationship between Carlos Harvey and Zambrano within this game. Mm-hmm. The problem is for the most of that, it's diluted because they're not connected enough to the back line and they're not connected enough to the front line. So there's a clear separation between Church and State. The front three left a lot to be desired because even though Arteaga got his two goals and he deserved them, he certainly showed you that he's a proven goal scorer. There was not a lot of combination play between the front three, almost to a fault at time from Cuejo where he would pick it up, cut in, and the simple ball would be 5 yards away. And the next thing you know, he's dribbling across the field. So what I got out of it was some defensively, it's getting a little bit better, but still a lot of struggles. And attacking wise, I would say the same thing.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, who were the highlights for you? I'll tell you that I loved seeing Carlos Harvey signed to this team. I think he's doing really well. I think Cuejo is doing phenomenally well, and he is all over the pitch. It's nice to see Arteaga getting those two goals. I hope there's going to be more to come from him. Some of the changes that were made with Kev Lambert not being a midfielder, but he's being pushed to the back line. And I think he's doing well there. So, you know, these are just some of the things that I take away in terms of the personnel. I think Gabby Torres is playing a fantastic game as well. Do you concur? Are there others that maybe I'm not mentioning?
No, I'm with you. Go with Cuejo for a minute, mm-hmm. Emil. Here's my thing about him positionally. You're not wrong. He's all over the pitch. He's aggressive. He's hungry. I'm with that. You also have to understand that stylistically within this system, there are times to go and times not to go. And I'm watching his movements at times with or without the ball, and they're not structured enough. Now, there is a structure put in place, but let's just say that the execution of the game plan, where he's floating off into spaces that he shouldn't be, and other times he's floating off into spaces and people aren't recognizing it. That's okay. Repetitions. I would also say that consistency within the squad, they don't know each other's movements yet. I just had the opportunity to interview Juan Guerra about the Open Cup game, and I can give you some direct quotes about it, and I fully agree. You're going to see rotation in the Open Cup game no matter what, right?
Okay.
He still doesn't know what his starting 11 is. Now, the good news is that they've gone out in the offseason and they've given this team a lot of depth within the system, which even in the change last year and the talent that they had, you didn't have depth. Regardless of how good those guys were, they weren't built to play in that system. So now you have depth in there. Right. They feel there may be somewhere between 50 and 75% of what that starting 11 should be. 50 or 75%. I mean, 5, 6, 7 players out of 11? That's not a good thing, but it is a good thing in terms of depth. That's how deep the team is. But they haven't seen them all together. The only time they've seen this team in the same starting 11 is the first two preseason games of the year. So I don't care who you are. That's a problem, right?
Right.
So the roles and the responsibilities have not 100% been established. And so within that, it's going to take a couple of more games. He specifically said like the 3 to 5 game range is something in there. I love the shout for Carlos Harvey. He's one of my personal favorites. I would say developmentally within the Galaxy organization, thought they should have used him more with the first team, to be honest, whether it was their issues or not. Understand that in 2020, when the pandemic hit, silver lining for a lot of the players that were involved on LA Galaxy 2, Los Dos, is they ended up taking, I believe it was 8 players permanently because of the way that the bubble existed. It was quarantined for like 10 days or 14 days, something crazy, just to get in. And then you had to fitness-wise realize that you've been training separately. You've got to get your fitness up to then go and play. That they couldn't then send you back because they would have been 14 days again. So they took a look at their ideal talent, who has an actual opportunity to challenge these guys and play. Carlos Harvey is one of those players. He's a great 6, a decent enough 8. He's a ball winner. and he's got a huge engine in the midfield. He does the same thing for the men's national team in Panama, that although he hasn't made a ton of appearances, he's regularly getting looks in camps, and he is on the bench. I look at him as one of the players that could be a game changer for this team. Would love to selfishly see him next to Kev Lambert, but to your point, Lambert moving onto the back line, it's a new role. Jamaica's trying to do some of the same stuff. One player that you didn't mention that I'm really keeping an eye on is Fede Varela up front. And you know, at his age, what is he going to produce? Because that's a guy who just has tons and tons of appearances, and he can operate, you know, if you want to play a double 10 system, he can do that. You can play him wherever you shift, like he's comfortable on the wings, on the inside. Again, there's a lot left to be desired from this team in general, yet alone the attacking side. But I think you named a couple of good players. Defensively, things for me really need to start taking some steps, though.
Okay, we'll be watching out for that. Devin, Phoenix got the first goal. It was in the 35th minute. It was a beautiful long ball to Uzo, who did really well to get behind the San Diego defender, moved swiftly toward the goal and centered the ball to the oncoming Arteaga. Beautiful goal. And then that took us up to halftime. So we didn't see any other goals. But just when we got to halftime, score is 1-0 to Phoenix. We had 44% possession. We had 5 shots, 2 on target. That compares to San Diego's 6 shots with 0 on target. Phoenix had 3 yellow cards. San Diego had none. So did you like what you were seeing from both teams in that first half?
This answer is very much beauty in the eye of the beholder. It is, if you're San Diego, you had the better possession in a more advanced role on a regular basis. But to your point, statistically, you have 6 shots and none on goal to show for it. So, you know, a coach will sit there and say, we had the ball, we were good, we were aggressing into the final third, agree with all that, but they didn't challenge Rocco Rios Novo. So if you're in Phoenix's shoes, you're sitting there going, well, we gave them all of that ball, and sure, they had more of it. Yes, it was difficult. We were defending deep, which I, as a coach in person, don't like. But they also didn't give up any shots on target. If I had to pick one, I like the look of San Diego better. Now, when I go back to, you know, that's a subjective viewpoint. As a coach, I don't want to give up any opportunities or possession no matter what. I want to dominate a team from start to finish in every phase of the game. Phoenix didn't do that. I will say that their ability to move back to front and that 45 minutes was probably the best we had seen out of them so far this season. Certainly better than the last time that they played San Diego. There were glimpses against the Battery, but that 45 minutes right there, you saw, especially when they had the real intent, that they could string together 10 or 15 passes over a 20-second sequence and really be effective moving forward.
And I'd agree with you there, Devin. I'm definitely seeing improvements every time we play. Into the second half, Devin, in the 63rd minute, Phoenix run the attack. The ball was being passed around on the right side of the park. Cuejo decided to move towards goal. He was too quick for the loyal defenders. He beat the third and sent the ball toward goal with force. The San Diego goalie put his hands up to stop it, ricocheted out. Manu Arteaga was there to send the ball home. 2-0 to Phoenix. Kudos to Arteaga, Devin. How about the skill from Emil Cuejo?
Yeah, so what you saw in this, if you go back and watch the beginning of this spell of possession, everything that you see in this movement from Phoenix, it's Cuejo, it's Arteaga, it's the movements, it's the speed, it's the ability to slow the game down and then go quick again. That right there is the perfect depiction of what Juan is trying to do. That is Juan Guerra's system in a nutshell. They had shown you in the first half, and we just talked about it, how they could sit deep and counter, and that's how the goal happened, right? But their ability to pick up possession, and then, especially in an advanced role, like they don't want to pick up possession on the top of their 18 or in their box. They're looking to take over the reins and control that midfield or even higher. So that is what this system is built for. And yes, you want it to take care of the entire field of play, but that movement right there was everything you want. It was one of the better movements from Cuejo for sure. I thought you saw everything. You saw speed. You saw the tactical ideas where they could rotate out of position and you could still find success within it. That's some of the stuff that I talked about, right, when you brought up Cuejo, where it's like there are times when he goes and times when he stays. That was one where he executed perfectly, 100%. Right. Now, can you replicate it? That's going to be the real question for them. Because really, after that, it was kind of, okay, we're going to try and put this on cruise control. And a lot of what you started to see glimpses of in the first half for San Diego came back to bite them towards the tail end of the game.
Okay. San Diego did respond with two goals in the 72nd minute. They had a goal, and then the 80th minute, they got that second goal. And that's where Ronald Adamas was coming in on the left side. He took a hard shot. It was close to goal. It ricocheted out. They had another shot. It ricocheted out again. And then there was another shot, and it kind of wormed its way over the goal line. And Devin, that was hard to watch. I'm not sure that there's anything the defenders could have done about it because, you know, it's there. It's in the mixer and things are going crazy.
Friendly reminder, by the way, too, that, and this is important, to me, it was two changes, and it's not just because of personnel. It's because of energy levels. Evan Conway is a menace, regardless where you play him. Came on high intensity. You know he's going to run, chase. Elliot Collier had gotten tired, for sure. And so you saw him pressing and putting less pressure, even more so, on. Same thing for Camden Riley and Joe Corona. Now, the difference in those roles, obviously, are glaring because of the area that the field that they play on. Conway's going to be higher. Both Corona and Riley are deeper. Get that. But even when you bring a fresh player on, like, it literally, they stepped onto the pitch and it was like, all right, we're ready to play. Let's go. Like, forget about the fact that we're down 2-0. We know that we can attack. We certainly give ourselves some opportunities. Those guys came on and there was direct intent right away. Wondered if Juan was going to make changes earlier, because I actually thought after, even right around the Phoenix goal, if not just before, the team started to look a little tired. Now, that could have easily gotten a goal, and they could have kicked it into overdrive. That didn't happen, though. So after the goal, actually thought they might have made changes a little bit sooner. Like, 65th minute was where I was expecting it. When it didn't come, and I'm watching the game, I'm going, they're starting to look tired. It's getting worse. San Diego make changes. All of a sudden, boom, they grab one. Phoenix makes a change. The change times between that, you've got 2 minutes from the first San Diego goal to the Phoenix change. You've got, I believe it was like 5 minutes to then the next goal. Those windows right there are areas of disruption that you will commonly see, not even just in the modern game, but in the game overall, because players coming in can either come on and go right to the top of the game because they're so fresh and there's so much energy. The other side of it is it causes disruption within the chemistry that has been built. And I don't think the chemistry was that high for Phoenix in general. Back up. I know it wasn't that high in general. So they're hanging on a little bit. They're tired. They're trying to build off of the goals. But then all of a sudden, they give up one. Now there's a change from San Diego. Now there's a change from Phoenix. They're scrambling. The second goal comes up. I was a little bit surprised, to be honest, that they didn't concede a third and lose this game.
Okay. So at the end of the day, we tie it. It's 2-2. Would you say that was a fair result?
If you take, again, if you go back and look at stats, if you look at stats and big chances and goals, sure, you could say that it's a fair result. If I had to pick a team and I was a coach, I'd be much happier if I was Nate Miller and San Diego Loyal. I'll put it that okay. That's probably the best way to say it.
Very good. Let's talk about the league, Devin. Big changes to the league this year in terms of the teams. We've got two teams this year, and how's that affecting the overall league?
Great question. Combination of things. I would start with the fact that not having the two teams is a very good thing, in the sense that there were levels of competition within some of the two teams that weren't very good. Let's be honest.
Right.
That has changed over the years. You know, Red Bull 2 was a team. Red Bull 2, Philadelphia Union, formerly known as Bethlehem Steel, those were two organizations that they did such a good job in the early phases of being, hey, we are going to blend players that we're developing. We're going to bring, 18 to 20. We're going to bring in some young players that we think could be the future, and we're going to take our draftees or college prospects, and we're going to mold them all together. And they found success. As that went on, they got really young. And that does two things. A, it does give younger players more exposure to the game, but it drops the level down heavily within a match. And that's an issue. And, plenty of these teams have found success, whether it's Los Dos or you know, Loudon or Red Bull 2 or whatever. And but, you know, that level, when it drops, teams can kind of back off a little bit. Oh, it's just LA Galaxy 2. Oh, it's just, you know, it's just Loudon. There are so many 2 teams. Portland Timbers 2, right? And so I do think in the grand scheme of things that it's great that they're gone. Great. It's good for the league. I would say in terms of player personnel, to me, one of the strongest assets for those 2 teams was the ability to loan them to USL Championship squads because it helped their development. So if Phoenix Rising fans remember, a kid like Hayden Sargis, who grew up in Sacramento, started making regular appearances, so much so that DC United found him as an asset. They go buy him.
Right.
And he was caught in a gray area last year, so they loaned him to Phoenix. Phoenix saw a very small sample size of that player. But because of the way that loan structures are this season, you don't have the ability to send a player back and forth anymore. If you're going to loan him, it's going to be a season-long loan. So that player doesn't have the ability to come to a Phoenix Rising or to a San Diego Loyal or Louisville City. So now, on his end, he's got to fight a little bit more, and he is on the DC United bench last 2 games, just made his first pro appearance in MLS history for DC United, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
So his debut's out, but Phoenix can't go get players like that. Carlos Harvey would have been one of those players. So instead, they don't have the ability to go get some of those guys. If it is, it's going to be a much longer loan. I think that's the area where, if you look directly at just the 2 teams, that's where it hurts this league.
Wow. Hey, Devin, I just want to ask you about rosters. You know, when we look at other leagues, we see that there are transfer windows, but we don't hear about transfer windows in the USL, or am I just missing it?
That's a great question. My direct answer to you would be, yes, there is a transfer window. And the problem that comes with that is, let me actually see if I can read you this.
Okay.
The problem that comes with that is there are so many gray areas when it comes to the transfer window. So the roster freeze is actually September 23rd, 2022. That's what it was last year. This year, I would imagine it's the same time. The difference is that that only applies to domestic moves and free agent signings, not loanees.
Okay.
So I'm giving you a very long-winded answer because I don't know the direct answer this year. There are so many different gray areas that you could give. So that's for free agent signings and domestic moves. Now, it doesn't cover all domestic moves, though, because there are caveats within loanees and then loanees within an organization. So like if you were a 2-team player and you were loaned from your parent organization, it's very different than a 2-team player who was loaned to a different USL championship squad, a la Hayden Sargis, DC United, Loudon to Phoenix Rising. Those guidelines change every single year. So if you reached out to the USL Championship front office, I'm not even sure they could give you a direct answer at this point in time. And to be fair to them, because the leagues change every year, like MLS changes, USL changes, they all have their own rules that they operate by, that then when they start to coincide with each other, I'm sure that it's probably not priority. It's we're going to figure us out. If someone wants to get loaned within the league, that's one thing. But if they're going league to league, that's another. So, again, I know that's long, but that's just kind of – I'm dealing with the same thing you guys are. It's the best way to put it, right?
It's messy.
It's frustrating. It's messy and it's frustrating because we all want to know, right? We want to go, hey, if our team wants to go get a new player in the spring, what's the earliest he can sign him or the latest? In the fall, when does it reopen and when does it close again? Because everywhere else in the world, that's black and white.
Right. Okay, I've just got a few more minutes of your time, so we're still talking about the league.
Yep.
Let's take Phoenix Rising out of this. Who are the top 2 players in the Western Conference right now? Top 2 players. What did I say? Players. Top 2 teams. My apologies.
Okay. So, I have been too much to the chagrin of Phoenix Rising fans. I know they gave me a lot of grief last year. I've been a fan of Sacramento for a while. I would go back to when Mark Briggs took over. And, you know, I said coming into last season that team, it was the first year that we knew that that was Mark Briggs's team. And I felt that they could do something special. Not to pat myself on the back, but they did. They made it to an Open Cup final. Mm-hmm. And they were still a team that certainly looked decently throughout the USL Championship campaign. You saw the issues of ups and downs in terms of some of their performances at times because of navigating so many different fixtures, and yet they still finished as a top four team. They had the best record of a lower division team since 2000, I believe, in sixth, while navigating Open Cup play. That's pretty impressive.
Wow.
They would tell you that they were upset because they didn't win Open Cup, obviously, and they didn't win a title. I still look at Sacramento Republic as being a team that I really like. They destroyed Louisville on the weekend, 5-0. That was a combination of Louisville being very bad, but Sacramento also being very, very good. So I really liked what I've seen out of Sacramento Republic. I think you'd be crazy not to think that San Antonio isn't another title contender. You don't have to agree with how they play and the way that they go about their business, but I use the word again, they are very clean and efficient in how they perform. It's not how I would set my team up, but they know what they're doing. Alan Marcino, once again, has reloaded in certain areas. That team will be a title contender. And one that I kind of look at that could be a fun one, a dark horse. I kind of like what Monterey Bay has done. You know, they came together last year. Frank Yallop, love him as a coach. He's a good person. His players believe in him. They, in my opinion, in the long term, could be building something very special.
Okay, cool. So your final word here, Devin.
So the team is still a little knocked up. You know, Jose Hernandez, Danny Trejo, Zambrano, those guys, although are coming back, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, we'll say, in terms of overall health. There's a defending curve. Juan is very understanding of the fact that, you know, I talked about the system and getting a starting 11, that defensively, and these are his words, although I shared some of mine, that they have not executed at the level that they want to. And the way that I phrased it to him was, I'm watching games one and I see some movements out of the back line and rotation that really make me believe that this team is starting to get it. And there are other times where you may be frustrated beyond belief. And Juan said, you're spot on. We know that this is going to take time and there are stages to this. And we are very much at the beginning stages of this, that it's not just style and personnel that bleeds into the culture. What is the locker room like? Travel. It's easy for a fan to sit at home and go, we're not getting results. You have to account for all of these things. Now, they take full responsibility of all of that, but that is not going to change overnight. And I'm sure for Phoenix Rising fans, they've probably heard that for a while because they dealt with frustration with Rick Shantz and the team last year. But I would urge them to give this time because this is a process. And having been a player that's been involved in coaching changes and regimes and personnel and all that, it's not fun for us either. And I say us as players, and I can only imagine being in that locker room right now because you go to war together all week long, that the games are supposed to be the fun part, honestly. Like, the training is the worst part. No one wants to go to training. But then you get out and you get to go explore yourself. You're artists, right? So that takes time. The committal of what this is going to look like for Open Cup, Phoenix is going to walk a fine line because they are trying to find form in general and personnel, and now you add in a cup competition. So he's got to keep guys healthy. So he knows that he's walking a really fine line of expectations within the club of going to get results. And that's going to be very different for Phoenix than it is for Louisville. People can look at a title contending team like Louisville and Phoenix and say, hey, these guys are there every single year outside of last year for Phoenix. We expect the same. No, don't expect the same, because the roster in Louisville has been around for a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
The expectations, although maybe similar within the clubs, let's be clear, the results are very different. Louisville has gone to a final every single year. Louisville has gone to a championship game multiple times over the past couple of seasons. Phoenix has only done it twice. Louisville has won those games. Phoenix has not. And so with all of those changes, people need to just pump the brakes a little bit. I'll leave you with this quote. Juan said to me, if you want to experience heaven, you have to deal with a little bit of hell. I thought that was really telling as to where they are, but where also they aspire to go, right? The glory land is something that everybody dreams of, but you truly have to dig down deep, get into your own soul, and reach the depths of hell. Interpret that however you want. Training, poor performances, growing pains. As a player, I look at it as I have to suffer on one side to get to the mountaintop on the other. fans will have to deal with some of that as well. But greatness is in the future. The question is, how far ahead do they have to see in it to get there?
Awesome. Fantastic. It is so great to have you back on the show, Devin. Love having you on. Go have a birthday party with your son and have a fantastic rest of your day.
Appreciate you guys. Can't wait to be with you all tomorrow night. Even if I can't see you all, you guys will hear me and I will be with you in spirit. Good luck tomorrow night. Thank you for having me on, Niall.
So great. Thank you, Devin.
Thanks, brother. Love to you guys. And we'll talk to you soon.